This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Dr. Hiranya Pieris has been giving a talk here at the Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics today. She's from University College London. Could you first tell us what sort of things you work on?
So I'm a cosmologist. What that means in practice is that I study the very large-scale properties of the universe. So there are many astronomers that study things like galaxies and planets and so on. And for me, those are just points. I want to know more the very big questions, which is, you know, how is the universe evolving? How did it begin? Where is it going? What does it contain in the very broad terms? My particular specialization is in early universe cosmology, which means that I try to figure out what powered the Big Bang.
Okay, so how on earth do you look back to the early universe? I mean, that's
14 billion years ago, yes. So I study something called the cosmic microwave background, and that is the very earliest light that you can see in the universe. So it's like a baby picture of the universe, and it comes from when the universe was only about 400,000 years old. And as we said earlier, now it's about 14 billion years old. The early universe was a very, very hot and dense place, and it was so hot that everything was in the form of a plasma. There was no neutral atoms. As the universe expanded, it cooled, and the plasma turned into neutral atoms. So before this transition, all the light in the universe was bouncing around. It was bouncing against electrons in something called Compton scattering. The moment that it became neutral, these light particles were suddenly free, and they basically pervaded the universe. So we see this transition from going from being a plasma to being neutral in the cosmic microwave background. So the universe has continue to expand since then. So what we see now is very, very hot light, so gamma rays or something at the very early universe, having been stretched out by the expansion of the universe into the microwave band. So something that was very hot back then, we see now at about 3 degrees Kelvin, 3 degrees above absolute zero. The cosmic microwave background is when the universe went from being completely ionized to being completely neutral. There's another transition in the universe where it went from being dominated by radiation in terms of its energy density to being dominated by matter.
So you described it in your talk, the cosmic microwave background, or the CMB, as being the fingerprint of the early universe. So when we see that today, how does that tell us about how the universe used to be at the time when it first formed?
If you had microwave eyes and you could look at the cosmic microwave background, basically you would see a uniform light, a black body at a temperature of about 3 degrees Kelvin all over the sky. But if you could somehow turn up the contrast, and this is what cosmologists have done with experiments, you can actually see that there are little fluctuations of one part in 100,000 embedded on this 3 Kelvin black body. And those little fluctuations represent the initial perturbations that later, under the action of gravity, formed all the structure we see in the universe. All the galaxies, clusters of galaxies, everything originated from these tiny fluctuations in the early universe. So now it turns out that the statistical properties of these fluctuations have a direct connection to physics that are operating at really, really high energy scales. So we're talking about something called the GUT scale, the Grand Unified Theory scales. That's 10 to the 15 giga electron volts.
So that's 10 to the 1 with 15 zeros after.
That's
it.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
But
so very,
as well.
Very, so very, very high energies. You probably heard of the Large Hadron Collider. That's at about a TeV. So 10 to the 15 GeV is so much higher that we will never be able to directly test those energy scales with earthbound experiments. So looking at this very early light and seeing the little fluctuations imprinted on it might be the unique or one of the very few ways that we can test physics at such high energy scales.
Yeah, I think that's about a million times the Large Hadron Collider
yes,
energy.
Yes, that's right.
I can't even comprehend that.
No.
So the CMB is telling us something about the physics of the early universe that we can't derive from any experiments today. Mm-hmm. What is that physics like? I mean, what sort of things are thought to have happened before that time?
One way that you can think about the evolution of the universe is to say that these little fluctuations were imprinted by some process. And as we said, the process could have been at very, very high energy scales. So imagine that we decided we don't want to think about those physics, and we're going to imagine that the universe started off radiation dominated and these fluctuations came from somewhere. Someone set the initial conditions. And then you can carry on and fit a lot of observations. And this is called the standard Big Bang model. And this is a model which has a lot of observational support and a lot of observational success. However, it turns out that we can't just assume the initial conditions were set by something which you're not going to describe and then follow the later evolution. And one of the reasons for that is actually obvious the moment you look at these little fluctuations that are in the CMB. The speed of light directly relates to how things can communicate with each other. If you have two things separated by some distance, the fastest way to exchange information between them is by exchanging light between them. So that's the fastest speed limit that we have in the universe. So if two things are so separated that they couldn't have communicated in a given time by exchanging light, then they were never in touch with each other. So it turns out that on the cosmic microwave background sky, if things are separated by more than about a degree, in the history of the universe, light could not have exchanged information between those points. Yet we see that the temperature of such points is the same to one part in 100,000. So it's extremely unlikely that just by chance, the temperature would be the same to such a high degree between those two points. So that might be slightly puzzling, but let's draw an analogy to the following problem. You have a large class of students, and you ask them to write an essay, and the essay must be 100,000 words long, okay? So they hand in their essays, and you find that all the essays are identical except for, say, one word out of 100,000 different. And you know they must have communicated. There's no way they would have just come up with that by themselves. So in analogy, we know that those points which are separated by more than a degree on the sky must have communicated. So that immediately points to the fact that we need something other or extra to the standard Big Bang model. And that theory is called inflation. So this is not the same inflation that you have in the economy, but it's called inflation because it basically postulates that the universe expanded by a factor of about 10 to the 30 in a tiny instant, something like 10 to the minus 42 to 10 to the minus 35 seconds. So in that time, it expanded by a huge factor. And if that happened, it solves this problem that I discussed earlier called the horizon problem, and it also solves many others. But what's particularly compelling about this theory is that at the same time, it tells you how these little fluctuations, the one part in 100,000 fluctuations, originated.
That's quite difficult to understand as well, and that's quite difficult to get your head around. So we're saying mm-hmm. that the whole space of the universe itself mm-hmm. just suddenly inflated like a balloon.
Yes.
But incredibly quickly.
Yes. So it sounds like a huge extrapolation of physics, but we actually see that this process is happening today. It seems that today the universe is expanding at an accelerating rate, and this is called dark energy. So it's an observational reality today. So we don't think that the same process happened during inflation. Clearly, the same effect happened during inflation, but not the same process because the energy scales that we're talking about are so different. But on the other hand, we know the universe can accelerate in its expansion because we see it happening today.
Do we have any physical idea of why a period of inflation occurred? Is it something that's contained within any of our existing theories of space and the universe?
It requires an extrapolation of existing theories. And in particular, it requires a very funny kind of exotic physics, which gives rise to a negative pressure. So all of the components of the universe that we know about today, except for the dark energy that I mentioned briefly, has a zero or positive pressure.
So it's sort of pushing outwards.
Yeah, it's pushing outwards. So the ratio between the pressure and the energy density of whatever fluid that drove inflation has to be negative. It's very hard to imagine because it's such a thing that's so removed from our, you know, everyday existence, right? Perhaps the best way to think about it is if you take a flute and you, instead of blowing out, kind of pull in on it, something like that. But that's probably a very bad analogy. I think it's one of those things that for which there is no analogy because it's so beyond our everyday existence. But in terms of physical equations, what it needs is to have a negative pressure to energy density ratio. And there's a thing called the scalar field, which can implement this kind of thing. So implementing something like a scalar field, I think, was observationally motivated because we see that this acceleration in the expansion rate must happen. And to get an accelerating phase, you need this negative pressure. And this is the thing that can give negative pressure.
I think we're getting into scary physics now.
Yes.
So if we move on, I wanted to talk a bit about the instruments that you used to study the CMB. I know you were very involved with WMAP, which was the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe. Can you tell us a bit about your work on that?
Yes. So the cosmic microwave background was first discovered in 1965. And that was a Nobel Prize winning discovery. Fantastic. After that, there were some ground-based experiments. And then the first satellite was called COBE, Cosmic Something Explorer.
Background?
Background. Cosmic Background Observer.
I think it was CO for Cosmic.
Yeah. I love astronomy.
Actually. Yeah. So that was the first satellite. And that detected these fluctuations that I talked about that we see in the CMB. And that's also a Nobel Prize winning discovery. The second cosmic microwave background satellite was called WMAP. I say was because it has just been turned off. Very sad. Aww. That was launched in 2001. And took data for about 8 or 9 years. It was the first time that the CMB fluctuations had been mapped at high resolution because COBE had quite a bad resolution, just enough to detect the fluctuations but not to really explore their properties. So that was actually quite revolutionary in the field of cosmology because for the first time we had data which was very, very precise from the CMB that was characterized very well because when you're in space, you can control the systematics very well of the experiments. It's in a very stable, cold environment. So we had an experiment which was producing data which was very, very well understood, and it could be used to compare with cosmological models. That, as well as some other data, led to what's called the era of precision cosmology. Before that, cosmology used to be quite an uncertain science. And now we know the properties of our universe to about a percent precision. And WMAP was one of the experiments that made that possible.
I think there was a famous spectrum that you got from WMAP, wasn't there? I remember writing an essay on that in school and saying to my teacher that this graph showed the prediction and the observation, but they're so close that it's only one line, and she'd marked me down because she thought that I'd labelled it wrong.
That's very funny. Yeah, it's actually really stunning to see that what you're talking about is the power spectrum, which possibly a scary physics phrase, so maybe moving 50 long. It describes the properties of these fluctuations, and the measurements were so precise. When you plotted the model, you could barely see the measurement errors. When I started in school, cosmology was completely uncertain. And, you know, it was a turning point, I think.
Yeah.
So are the things that we see then in the CMB power spectrum telling us that the universe seems to be the way we think it is? Does it agree with the models of inflation and expanding universe?
It certainly agrees with the model of the expanding universe, the hot Big Bang, extremely well. And inflation, given that it's a big extrapolation of physics, as I mentioned before, has been extremely successful in matching the observational data
And there are a whole number of points in which there were non-trivial predictions made by inflation, and all of those so far have been satisfied. Of course, in science, we don't prove theories. We seek to disprove them. So people are doing even greater tests of this model with new data from a new satellite called Planck, which is a European satellite. It's the first time that there has been a European CMB satellite. And this is right now taking data at precision and sensitivity and resolution never before attempted. It's way out, well beyond the orbit of the moon at the L2 Lagrange point, and it's scanning the sky from there. It's already scanned the sky completely once, and it's doing the second sky survey now. The data is beautiful. Unfortunately, I'm not allowed to talk about it.
We've covered Planck before, but the Lagrange points are kind of balance points between the gravity of the Earth and the Sun. So Planck is constantly shielded by the Earth. Is that right?
Well, basically, what you don't want it is for it to point at either the Earth or the Sun or any bright body, because right. We want such a stable environment to measure something just 3 degrees above absolute zero.
So on a completely different topic, some of our listeners might remember an interview with a photographer called Max Alexander that Stuart did at the National Astronomy Meeting earlier this year, and you were actually the subject of one of his photos. So I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about that, and how did you get involved with that to start off with?
Well, he called me one day and said, can I take a photograph of you for an astronomy outreach project funded by STFC, which is the funding council that funds astronomy in the UK? And I thought he was just going to come and take a picture and leave, right? And I'm quite a shy person. I don't like my photo to be taken. So I was like, I agreed to do it because it's very good to do outreach, and it's very good to show that people doing astronomy are not just kind of boffins in white coats with wild hair, with beards. So I agreed to do it. It turned out that it was bit off a bit more than I could chew, in a sense, because I didn't know what this kind of photographer, how they work and so on. And what I thought was something where he comes and takes my picture and leaves turned out, I think it was about 5 hours of holding one-handed a television which was plugged in and tuned to nothing, so it was seeing the static. And that static, about 1% of that is cosmic microwave background.
Wow.
Yeah, I had to stand on a chair or something as well. And there were all these lights in your face, and there was a blackboard behind me, and he was really, really upset about a tiny little reflection of the lights on the blackboard that I couldn't see even. So it took a very long time, and I've developed massive muscles on my right arm now.
So that was a photograph of you and the CMB together.
Yes, that's right.
And what you're talking about is if you detune it, the TV, from any channel, the sort of black and white snow that you see.
That's right, yes.
So I remember a cosmology professor that taught me once telling us what you were saying about 1% or something came from the CMB, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
He said it might not look like much, but it's more interesting than most of what you got on television anyway.
Absolutely, yeah.
I guess that's a shame with switching to digital, is that in future generations won't ever be able to experience that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'm not even sure that current TVs can be detuned in this way. So
I don't know. Being a student, I've still got quite an old TV.
Right.
Well, I think we're out of time. So thank you very much for talking to us today, and good luck with all your future research.
Thanks very much.